In the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end." "How will this be?" Mary asked the angel, "since I am a virgin." The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. Even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age, and she who was said to be unable to conceive is in her sixth month, for no word from God will ever fail." "I am the Lord's servant," Mary answered. "May your word to me be fulfilled." Then the angel left her. At that time, Mary got ready and hurried to a town in the hill country of Judea. And Mary said, "My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things and has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, just as he has promised our ancestors."
Thank you, Laura, for that reading. So as you know, we're gathered here on the first Sunday of Advent. It happens to be a foggy Advent morning, which doesn't maybe quite have the feeling of wintertime. But to many of us, it's we've heard the Christmas story our whole lives. To some of us here, it might be a new story. But whether we have grown up alongside it or are just getting to know it, I'd like to encourage us in these next few weeks to look at the story of Christmas in a whole new way. This Sunday morning is the onset of Advent, and as early as the second century, Christians around the world were beginning to celebrate significant events from the life of Jesus on a seasonal basis. So while we here at Elevation have been recognizing Advent for the duration of our church history, the context is much greater than ourselves, and we are part of a larger celebration around the world. It's kind of amazing to know that we're part of that. The word Advent itself, as Brandon had mentioned, means coming or arrival. And we are together on a spiritual journey that calls for an expectant waiting and readiness for the coming of Christ. The season of Advent is the theme of these next 4 weeks of December, leading up to Christmas. We are in a season of anticipation, of expectation, and of waiting. Our family is waiting eagerly for the snow to fall. I did bring a child to church this morning wearing shorts and a t-shirt, so clearly that season is not upon us yet, but it will be coming. You may be waiting for Christmas cookies to be baked. You may be waiting for the tree to be decorated, for carols to be sung, the turkey to be roasted, and holidays to begin. Or, as was mentioned earlier, this Christmas, or any Christmases, might be a difficult time for you. So you actually might be waiting for the season of Christmas to be over and finished with. If that's your case, I encourage you just to be here today and be present. Today, we're going to peek a little bit into the life of Mary and her season of waiting. Back in our fall series, one of our October sermons spoke about women being image bearers of Christ. We read an expert then from Carolyn Custis James in her She Leads podcast that's worth repeating part of this morning. She says, women are born to be leaders, and being born an image bearer of Christ means that you are a leader whether or not you have the title, the office, and the paycheck to go along with that. Mary was a great example of one such a woman. As far as we know, through the Bible history, she had no official title, she had no office, and no paycheck. She wasn't a queen, she wasn't a judge, she wasn't known outside of her village, probably. But she was born a woman, and therefore a leader, and God recognized her as one. But instead of endowing Mary with an office, a title, and a paycheck, God decided to give Mary a baby. There is nothing quite in the world like waiting for a baby to be born, whether it's a child of your own, a family member, a neighbor, a work colleague, or perhaps someone sitting here in your row at church. I'm almost certain there's probably one or two babies in waiting here in the audience with us now. And what a special time this is. It's an expectant and joyful waiting for the good news of a baby's birth. Every baby is special, and mom is to be. Know personally the long hours, the days, and the months that go into the process of waiting. But before the waiting begins, there is always an announcement. When the birth of Jesus was first foretold to Mary, she was already a young woman engaged to be married. Maybe she had already started on her wedding planning. Maybe she was thinking of setting up her new home, doing a little sewing, doing a little baking. Her focus would have been on starting a marriage first and beginning that journey of life, and a family second. Mary's plans and dreams of motherhood were probably in the distant future during her period of engagement, not the immediate present. But when the angel Gabriel visited Mary to deliver the news of her upcoming pregnancy, surprise pregnancy, Mary's future plans and preparations were thrown totally off course. She asked to the angel, "But how is this even possible?" And I sometimes imagine the things that she wondered to herself. How do you sew maternity clothes? Where do you find these baby things? Now, we don't know exactly how Mary felt or how she reacted, but we can try and imagine ourselves in a similar situation when we receive unexpected surprise news and we have to react to that. There may be a point in your own life where you have had such a moment when things didn't go exactly as planned and your path was altered. Either good news or not good news. You may be in the middle of such a situation right now, and you may be adjusting to it, or perhaps that pathway is somewhere in your future. Whatever the case, I challenge you today to learn from Mary's reaction to unexpected news and let her story influence how your response to God could look like in a similar situation. Today, I intend to tell a story from my own life, a personal story of how I reacted and responded to unexpected news and how it changed my heart. When my husband and I conceived our first child, I was finishing up grad school and taking the train up and down to Toronto, and I was busily concerned with completing a thesis and hunting down baby clothes and maternity clothes before our baby was due. At our school's June convocation, I was already 8 months pregnant, and I had to rent a graduation gown and check off the size I needed. I checked off XXXL. When I got to the school, it looked like a parachute. I didn't know what to expect. In our first pregnancy, I realized a change was going to come, but I couldn't see the trajectory of where it would take our family, our hearts, and even our faith. Jindy was working at a hospital position and riding a nice red Honda motorbike to work. We showed up to our nephew's soccer game on the motorbike together, and Jindy's sisters politely but very firmly informed us it wasn't appropriate for me to ride on the back of a motorcycle anymore. We hadn't actually considered that. Jindy suddenly began to drive the speed limit and obey 100% of all traffic laws. As a responsible father, he still does, but not on a red motorbike anymore, in a blue minivan. We searched for and bought our first house, which was a 100-year-old home a stone's throw from the doors of St. Mary's Hospital in Kitchener. Actually, the same neighborhood that Brandon mentioned last Sunday that he grew up in. Our kids are growing up in the same neighborhood by the same hospital. And although we loved the small house church that we had been married in and were still attending at that time, we began to search for a church with young children and families in it. We first came through the doors of Elevation in the spring of 2006. We were invited here by the Gingriches to hear a young missionary couple talk about their work in India. And the first thing that stood out for me were three other women with bellies just as large as mine. And those bellies turned out to be Caleb, Ezekiel, and Trinity, who are all now members here of our junior youth group. What connected Jindy to the church were some soccer players who invited him out to play. So thank you to Dave MacFan for a gracious welcome. After waiting and waiting, we welcomed Owen into the world in our home on August the 14th. We were thankful to God for a healthy first pregnancy and a natural birth, and we were overjoyed at meeting our little son at last. We were new parents, we were tired, but content. The first indication that our newborn had some medical concerns came at about 4 weeks old when we had to take him into eMERGE for the first time. Not sure what was happening, we were sent home to follow up with our family doctor, and we had many episodes in those first few months of his life and several more emergency room trips without any conclusive diagnosis. We almost lost him at 6 months old when Jindy threw Owen over his shoulder and sprinted to the ER in the middle of a cold February night. That's when Owen was first administered an EpiPen, and doctors were pretty certain that Owen suffered from anaphylactic allergies, but they didn't know what they were. So referrals, tests, and specialists followed, and a very long, anxious wait. Testing wasn't quite accurate until a year of age, so our advice from the medical profession was just to avoid anything that could cause a reaction. And we felt that we lived on edge a little until 12 months of age, until we received a full diagnosis. And then we knew the changes that we had to make in our diets, our lifestyle, and our home for his safety. It was a life-threatening concern. We heard before about Mary's questioning the angel Gabriel. How is this all going to happen? How is this all going to work? For me, I feel like there's such honesty in our questioning of God. And around this time, I myself began to ask, God, how is this all going to work? How can we possibly manage an infant, let alone an infant so delicate and so fragile? Many of our long-term plans were put on hold as we poured our energy and attention into caring for a child and figuring out how to make life work well with him. We had prayed for a baby, and we had a baby with so many health limitations. It was unbelievable to think of all the safety problems that the world held for our young son. I was a young mother. I was a brand new young mother, a mostly sleepless mother at this point. Some of you may relate to that right now. And at that time, I was absolutely terrified. I was scared that I wouldn't be able to do the right things that my child needed to keep him healthy, let alone alive. I questioned God. I questioned God and his plans and purposes for what seemed like months. I lived in fear that our son would get sick, which he did. And when he did, I lived in fear that the medications couldn't give his body the help that he needed. I used to cry and cry every time he had a bad reaction, and it wasn't helpful at all, but it hurt my heart so much to see my child so violently sick. I desperately wanted to be able to control the situation, the entire environment in which our little child was growing, and of course, I couldn't fully do that. I begged God to let me trade places with Owen, that I would be the one to be sick and that he would be well. I wanted a physical cure, and I prayed hard for a miracle, for Owen to be healed. My faith at this time remained waiting, and watching for what God would do to answer my prayers. My fears and my anxieties stayed present and close at hand, and Owen stayed closer. I had a hard time letting him out of my sight. I was anxious. I couldn't imagine a lifetime of constant vigilance, and I didn't see how it would be possible for him to live a healthy, normal lifestyle. In the meantime, I had a hard time seeing what God was already doing around me and the blessings he was already giving us. We had two more sons, Kobe and Miles, and we made the necessary health changes in our lifestyle, and we advocated really hard to create an environment that was safe for our firstborn. Some of these food restrictions and cleaning policies and permission to carry an EpiPen, many of these protocols that are common practice now in 2017 were just being introduced 10 years ago. And it was a constant explaining to get people to understand the severity of our situation. But I still prayed. I prayed and I waited. I prayed to God for physical healing and for a cure. And I questioned God. I questioned God and my faith when my prayers, the answers to prayers didn't come in the way that I was asking for. I fully doubted God's plans and purposes for our family. In Mary's story, she willingly received the promise that God had given her for a new baby. Even though her initial reaction was to question God, it was a surprise, after all, she moved on and she moved forward to accept the change in her new life course, the change in her life plans, and she stepped forward in her new reality. Mary demonstrated acceptance to God and to God's plans for her life, even though she may not have fully comprehended them. She relinquished control of her situation, and she trusted God in the unknown. I wish I could have been able to do that, but at that time I felt as if my trust in God was split into two different areas. There was part of me that wanted to be able to trust God, and part of me that didn't or couldn't or just was not able to fully trust God in our situation. When we were about a decade into our parenting journey, so this is 10 years later of waiting and praying and watching, we went to a summer family camp together and heard a sermon that was talking about healing. The premise of the message was that when we ask God for healing, our prayers are always answered. I wondered about this and thought. The speaker said that prayers are just not always answered in the way we may want them to be or expect them to be, or that we may not even recognize the answer that we're being given. The speaker talked about how healing can be physical, spiritual, emotional, or even relational in nature. That message challenged me and deeply spoke to me. And I felt that I was finally able to begin to recognize the answer to prayer that God had given and was continuing to give. God's blessing in our life was relational and spiritual healing, not physical. Although physical limitations are still present and will probably continue to be for the rest of our life, I feel that I'm finally ready to accept the fact that it's part of our reality, part of the story of our family. A life-threatening illness has completely changed the way we live, the choices we make, in living, travel, eating, recreation, work, education, and play. The reality of our son's illness is still present, but what has changed is that I don't feel the need to fight it anymore or ask God to take it all away and bless us with perfection instead. If you've ever sat behind our family in church, you'll know for certain we are far from perfection with our bouncy balls, our Rubik's cubes, and our fidget spinners. I'm trying to trust the process that God has given us instead. God has given us peace of mind, the ability to advocate and communicate in our community, and the trust to walk out in faith that our environment is safe and that care, when it's needed, is close at hand. I don't believe it was any coincidence that the first home we bought when we were still pregnant with Owen was a 30-second sprint from the doors of a hospital emergency room. God led us to purchase that home, and we're still there. This emergency room has saved our son's life on several occasions. I also don't believe it was any coincidence that Owen's dad is a registered nurse with medical training that allowed him to recognize an emergency situation in our infant son long before I did and respond appropriately. He has saved our son's life on several occasions. One night I was still putting on my winter boots at the door when Jindy and Owen were already through the doors of that hospital emergency room, and I was left wondering, what's going on? God has given me a tangible way in which I have to walk in faith every day. My personal prayer life, which was present at the time of his birth, but somewhat limited, if I'm honest, grew rapidly as I prayed every day for safety and for peace of mind and peace of heart. I learned to be cautious of our environment, yet trusting enough to let go of control. It's a gray area. For safety's sake, we had to keep our son close at hand in his early years, and our local school wasn't able to accommodate his health needs. We searched out and had to find a different educational approach, and we grew to embrace a style of attachment parenting that is highly relational in nature. That lifestyle is also God's blessing to us, although it was a challenge at the beginning, and still is. There have been many, many gifts given to us through this process in our community. Eli and Carolyn gave up peanut butter in their kitchen so we could visit their home with peace of mind. Sharon produced a little snack every Sunday morning and special treasures every Easter for little Owen to hunt for, as he could never have a chocolate egg. Tim often cooks a special dish just for Owen when we come for dinner without even being asked. Graham carried a big red cooler with Owen's food to J.R. Pitch and stood in the food line beside him every mealtime. Those are gifts of love from our community. Those are also blessings from God. Finally, at this point in the journey, I can say that I am grateful for God's interference with my plans for a perfect family. We are far from that. I'm still praying, but it looks a little different now. I'm not just praying for what I want God to do in our lives and how I want things to all turn out. My prayers are that I will be able to see how God is working and what he is already doing in our lives. I'm praying for God's will to be done and that I will be willing to accept it, and even more, to be thankful for it. After Mary received her unexpected news and questioned it, she accepted it. Her final response to the angel Gabriel was, "I am the Lord's servant, and may everything you have said come true." Later, Mary responded to God with a song of praise with words taken from the Old Testament scriptures. Laura read that to us earlier. And even though Mary's story happened 2,000 years ago, there are truths that are still applicable today. When we talk about waiting and watching, our concept of waiting is based on a very human concept of time. It's simply what we understand. But for God, the concern is not about time. Instead, his concern for us is that we are present with him right now in the moment that we are living. God's concern is that we can see him at work in the world all around us and within us. In other words, waiting is our actively being with God. Our human nature is to live out in fear and to try our hardest to control our environment and the outcomes of all our actions. It's very human to try and control our situation. We don't generally react well to unexpected news or a change in life course. We simply don't like it when things don't go as planned. Mary did eventually come to embrace the change, but it also wasn't her initial reaction either. God invites us to be with him in the moment and to let him lead. So how can we allow him into our waiting? How can we allow God into our hearts at the present moment and offer our unexpected news back to him in a prayer of gratitude and praise? How can we learn from Mary's perspective to turn a change in plans into prayer and praise and gratitude? How can we learn to actively wait with God? I'm just going to close in prayer. Please stand with me, if you will. Dear God, thank you so much for bringing us here on this foggy December morning. And I pray that you work in our hearts and our minds and open our eyes today just to see where you're at work and how we can wait with you and how we can respond to that with praise. In your name, amen. So now we'll invite